Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakraborty.
And I'm Deborah Becker. Now, Meghna, I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
List some of Boston's well-known cultural institutions.
The MFA, the Boston Symphony Orchestra, the Museum of Science.
Okay, but one place that you may not immediately think of when you put together that list is the zoo. That's the Franklin Park Zoo and the Stone Zoo in Stoneham. They typically don't attract as many visitors as zoos in other major cities.
True. So why is that? And I mean, it obviously didn't even come up on my list. Where and why do Boston zoos fall short? And should we even strive to have a great zoo? It's an important question when it means keeping wild animals in captivity.
Well, Michael Fitzgerald dealt with some of these questions in a recent Boston Globe magazine piece titled, Why Doesn't Boston Have a Better Zoo? He's a freelance journalist and he joins us in studio. Welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Also, we're joined by John Linehan, president and CEO of Zoo New England. It operates the Franklin Park Zoo and Stoneham's Stone Zoo. Welcome to you as
Thank you very much, Deborah.
And we're not going to diss the zoo the whole time, I promise. Okay. But listeners, we do want to hear from you as well. What do you think of the Boston area zoos? What would you like to see improved? Or does the whole idea of a zoo bother you? And what's your question for the president of Zoo New England? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at Radio Boston. And John, I would like to start with you. What would you say is the most common thing you hear from people about the Franklin Park Zoo and the Stone Zoo?
Well, almost to my frustration, perhaps sometimes, how much it's improved. Oh. And those are people who have tended to follow it. And know that, you know, like when I started, there was almost nothing there and could shut the gates any given day and nobody complained. So it's come a long way since then, but it is not, as you pointed out earlier, what it could be or should be relative to a city like Boston, relative to the values it would bring to the city of Boston or the state of Massachusetts or, in fact, the whole region.
So we should say when you started was about 1980. 1984, I think, the zoo made the list of the 10 worst zoos in the country.
Yeah.
Ouch.
When I started there, I actually wasn't even a zoo fan, didn't want to work in a zoo. Went to school for wildlife management, wanted to work in the wild. And I only took a job, the guy who ran the zoo, I was looking for help getting a job in Africa, and he offered me a job there, and I said, I'll take it for 6 months. And then you get an opportunity to start making a difference, and then an article like that comes out, and, you know, the zoos had languished and for literally for decades and decades, and it was in many ways well-deserved for that purpose. But it was frustrating.
So tell me, what do you tell people to say, give it another chance? This is what you should come, why you should come.
Yeah, I think the people who are coming already know that. They can see it happening. Hmm. With critics, I bring them in and actually show them what we're doing in the zoo. Show them the incredible staff we have, skilled and dedicated, and the animals that are very well cared for, actually remarkably well cared for, and you know, are usually multiple generations captive born. They aren't taken from the wild. They aren't. They wouldn't know how, for the most part, know how to survive in the wild, and they are not unhappy. And mm-hmm. so we treat them almost as if they're spoiled in many ways. But, but we've got some great staff. So I think that what Boston's been missing is having a great zoo, and what Massachusetts and New England has been missing is a truly great zoo that people can come and actually learn how to be global stewards in many ways.
Mm-hmm. Michael, in your magazine article, you talked about this, of course, and you said a lot of this has to do with history. This started as a pet project, right, of Honey Fitzgerald when he was mayor of Boston, and then when he wasn't mayor anymore, it sort of fell into this whole patronage kind of horrible thing. And for 35 years, it languished. But it's been 60 years since then, right?
Exactly. And I suppose I should note that although my last name is Fitzgerald, I'm no relation to Honey Fitz. I'm not trying to defend his honor and reputation. The thing that I think you raise a good question, and the thing that sort of I was curious about was, why do zoos matter for a city? I mean, lots and lots of cities, big and small, have zoos in the U.S., elsewhere in the world, and you know, the zoo is sort of dates back to this it has a history in ancient royalty for having menageries of unusual animals, and do we need to have these menageries still? And I think the sense that I got in writing this and in looking at the people who come to it is that there is a real fascination with nature. This is potentially a great living science museum. And that there is, for many of the people who live here, we're not going to see these animals in any other context.
But is history to blame in part for the fact that Boston doesn't have the zoo that many people believe it should?
Absolutely. It's a combination of history and sort of ongoing state disinterest and mismanagement. And it's difficult to shake those years of neglect in a very short period of time without marshaling a terrific amount of effort and energy, as we've seen in a couple of other cities. But if you're just going to let things bump along, you're spending all your time kind of maintaining, fixing, patching things. You're not growing, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah. I want to take some calls because we have a really interesting first call. Jeff Corwin, he is host of Animal Planet's The Jeff Corwin Experience and Corwin's Quest. Jeff, you are on the air. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. Delighted to be on with you folks. Oh. And I just was actually driving the car and I pulled over and I felt like I should throw a few words in.
Okay, well, we'd like to hear some words. Have you been to the Franklin Park Zoo?
I have been to the Franklin Park Zoo. You know, I'll tell you guys, the job I have today, my time series Ocean Mysteries on ABC and the stuff I've done, is largely the result of when my dad was a Boston police officer in Roxbury, and he would drop me off at the Franklin Park Zoo, which was kind of like my babysitter. And so zoos like Franklin Park Zoo, Zoo New England, are incredibly important resources, especially in urban areas. In many ways, they are the only access for nature, for inner city kids. And an encounter or an experience at a zoo can be a gateway into becoming a scientist or a naturalist or a conservationist. So I think zoos are critically important. And when you visit a zoo, you're really looking at the veneer of what a zoo does. Hmm. Behind the scenes, for example, Franklin Park Zoo is heavily involved in amphibian conservation. So the mission is not only to enlighten people about natural history and conservation, but actually to be in the front lines protecting natural resources. And that's kind of the mission statement of the modern 21st century zoo.
But, you know, we're talking about how do we make Boston Zoo better? How do we make it a world-class urban zoo so, you know, more inner city kids can take advantage of that nature? So conservation efforts can be improved. Well, what are your thoughts on that, Jeff?
Yeah, well, you know, here's what I think. You know, the idea of where the zoo is isn't a good enough of an excuse, because the truth is some of the world-class zoos are in some of the most urban areas. Look at the Philadelphia Zoo, the San Antonio Zoo, the Bronx Zoo. These are world-class institutions meeting a very vast diaspora of an urban community. But ultimately, a zoo is a reflection of the people around that. So if we want one of the best zoos, and by the way, Franklin Park Zoo is a world-class zoo, but if we want that zoo to shine even brighter, it really is a responsibility of this very wealthy community that makes up New England to push in and participate and help serve as the foundation, because ultimately that's what's reflected at the zoo, is the community that supports it.
So private fundraising would be a big help, and perhaps more public support as well, are you saying? Do we need more money? Do we need more interest?
Well, every zoo is hungry for resources. Hmm. You know, everyone has to eat. There's a lot of hungry mouths at a zoo. But ultimately, it's not only the responsibility of the community. I do believe that state government has an obligation to really ensure that this ambassador of our natural heritage and our global wild heritage really shines brightly and is the ultimate jewel. Because there are kids in Roxbury, there are kids in Dorchester, there are kids in JP, and you know, if they want to be the future wildlife biologists out there and they want to be in the front lines of saving species, they need that first encounter with the splendor of wilderness that sometimes you can only get at a zoo.
Just one quick question, John, because Jeff, because I'm going to ask this of John and Michael as well. There are a lot of folks now who, and I've heard this repeatedly, who say zoos may be becoming a thing of the past. Folks are concerned about animals. They don't want to see them in captivity. It's not as much of an attraction. And then, of course, there's technology now where we have cameras everywhere where you can almost watch animals in the wild. So what does that mean for zoos? Aren't there other ways now for kids to get, you're talking frequently about inner city kids being exposed to nature. Are there other ways, and are there other ways that would ease that concern about animals being in captivity? Jeff?
Well, certainly we live in a technology renaissance when it comes to ways for people to experience nature, whether it's watching my TV show or other shows out there. But really, there's nothing like that firsthand experience. And as John alluded to before, most of the residents that you see living at a zoo, the wild creatures that live there, are many generations of being captively bred in a very highly regulated system. And now we've actually come to that stage where we see habitat disappearing and compromised around the world, where we're taking animals like endangered rhinos and some African cats and taking them, this multi-generation creature, and getting it from the zoo environments back into the wild. So they're actually becoming a resource to sustain wild populations. So I think zoos, just like libraries, are incredibly important places for knowledge and ultimately connecting with nature and learning about environmental stewardship.
All right. Jeff Corwin, host of Animal Planet's The Jeff Corwin Experience and Corwin's Quest. Thanks so much for calling in.
Delighted.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the question I said I was going to ask you, John, and that is about the fact that some people are concerned about seeing animals in captivity. Now, I know you said they're spoiled, and I know Jeff touched upon this a little bit about saying...
I think it's not bad that they're concerned. They should be concerned. It's not perfect, but actually the wild is not perfect anymore either. You know, it's not what people envision, the wind blowing through the lion's mane out on the plains. That lion is coming, as Jeff mentioned, into ever smaller and smaller habitats that are isolated from each other, fragmented, and is going to necessitate managing wildlife like we do animals in zoos. But the animals that we have, you know, I don't know if you've watched animals in the wild. A prey species has its head on a swivel. It's nervous all the time. It's the only way it survives is to be at the top of its toes. Our prey species don't have to do that. They actually live a very relaxed life. The predators have to worry about getting kicked in the mouth by a zebra. Our predators don't have to worry about that. They, as Christopher, whose life we just celebrated, lived a long, happy 22 years almost.
May I jump in here? But they're still in captivity. I mean, the things that you were saying that predator and prey species have to worry about in the wild, that's the nature of their wildness. But in a zoo, they're in captivity. That's the fundamental difference. And
well,
I think that's what people are concerned
about. I guess it's
not
as fundamental
about.
As it used to be as these natural
areas. It's not different
areas.
Between being like in a wild animal park in Africa with many thousands of acres versus being you know, in a zoo.
Yeah, there certainly is a difference. And I think in an ideal world, being in nature is where they belong. I think that's why I wasn't comfortable with zoos to begin with. But I think so few of our kids in particular are ever going to get to see that in person. And I think it's an irreplaceable opportunity because it does literally change the way you think. And that's what our zoo is all about. It's about taking Joe Q public that comes in the gate, may not have any conservation orientation whatsoever, and just touching them, planting a seed. And maybe then they take one of our education classes and they grow a little bit more in their interest and their knowledge, and eventually they're changing their behavior. That's what I think zoos have in the conservation arena, this unique position as a nexus between the urban population and nature, and they can spark things. And we've got programs, you know, as we're building this new children's zoo we're working on developing programs where we not only bring in and teach the kids at the zoo, but then literally take kids out into nature to be in, you know, unmanaged nature and grow that.
Yeah, I would say that I think that that's a great in theory. I wonder if that really plays out in practice. But more to the point that Meghna and Deborah are getting at, I was ambivalent about zoos when I started this story, in no small part because Atlanta, one of the other zoos on that Parade magazine list in 1984, I was at that zoo as a visitor in late 84, early 85, and it was really grim. And I never forgot how grim it was and thought, gee, these zoos aren't great. But you know, the other thing that's going on is we're in the middle of this great extinction, this great die-off, and it was shocking to me to hear people that I was interviewing matter-of-factly say, you know, there are not going to be elephants in the wild in 10 years. There are literally not going to be any of these things in the wild. They're going to have to be. They're only going to be there in captivity. We already see this at the Stone Zoo where the Western wolf, the Mexican wolf, has been reintroduced into the wild because there are zoos where they were preserved. Otherwise, they would just be gone. So I'm less ambivalent. I get the captivity thing. It is painful in some ways to think about them not being in the natural state, but there is not necessarily going to be a natural state for most of them.
I would like to make sure that we get to the point of the Stone Zoo and the fact that its accreditation is under threat right now. It could lose accreditation in September, isn't that right?
That's correct.
So what's being done to do that, and do we need two zoos? Should we put both of them together?
I think it's a great question. I think we've looked at it many times, starting with that question, and always decided we can touch more people. We can deliver more mission with the two zoos, and we can actually generate more revenue. We have constraints between the two zoos that, for example, if everybody from Stone Zoo wanted to go to Franklin Park, it would actually not be able to park them. So we've got some of those basic constraints, but we've got other ones where people, if they're coming from New Hampshire, we get lots in New Hampshire. If they're coming from northern Massachusetts, they can make it to Stone Zoo, but they may not want to drive all the way into Boston. And there's a lot of reticence for some reason with North Shore people driving into the city. But we've got... I feel like Stone Zoo is actually almost running from a financial standpoint in a self-supporting manner, and so I think that it's a great opportunity for us that we shouldn't give up with a lot of investment in it already.
Okay, I would like to also make sure we get some calls in. Brian is calling from Arlington. Brian, you're on the air.
Yeah, how's it going?
Okay, how are you?
Good. I just had some questions related around fundraising. I used to be a teacher in Cambridge. And I used to take my students over to the Franklin Park Zoo. But just looking at fundraising, I was wondering what association they have with universities in the area, and also in terms of private fundraising, what types of events they have. I know they have the Brews at the Zoo coming up this weekend, and the Stone Zoo does a sort of lights thing. I just wanted to know sort of what they're doing to sort of raise funds and what other events there are out there.
Okay, thanks very much, Brian. I think, John, that's a question for you. As we heard from Jeff Corwin, you know, in the ever starving world, ever many mouths to feed at the zoo, are there fundraising events?
Absolutely. And we've been doing better and better each year in fundraising. We did just close out the capital campaign for a new children's zoo at Franklin Park, which was very exciting. But we also have increased our operating support on an annual basis, and last year just did really well. So it's up, I don't know, it was about 15%, I think, last year over the year before. But we've got a lot of events. We've got, as he said, Brew at the Zoo coming up Saturday night, which is a blast. We're doing a new one at Stone Zoo, Ales and Tales, similar event. But we do a big gala every spring called Zootopia that's our big fundraiser, and just a host of events throughout the year.
And speaking of that, it's my understanding that Governor Baker was at the one this past spring. Isn't that right?
Governor Baker as well as the mayor.
And so, state, let's talk about public funding for the zoo, because it's my understanding that you've been advocating for the state to release more funding from a bond that was authorized in 2008. And so is that something that may also bring in resources for the zoo that may help things along?
It absolutely could have an impact. I was thrilled that the governor had come to our fundraiser and the mayor as well, and we've been having some really constructive conversations with the new administration. We are still working on it, but I think it's got great potential to be able to really leverage it and bring in more private funds as well. I think that, as Jeff pointed out, there are not only a lot of hungry mouths to feed, there's a lot of work we have to do physically within the zoo to make it, you know, physically one of the great zoos. And as Jeff pointed out, we've got some great things happening already. Our vets are tremendous. Our animal care staff are top-notch, put them up against anybody's in the training programs, but we have to do physical development, new, really high-quality exhibits for those animals and for the people who visit them.
Mm-hmm. Michael, you had written some recommendations about how to help the zoo. Among them, a tax, I believe, was one of the recommendations as well. Passing a tax that would go to the zoo. I'm not sure how popular that would be. I would say maybe not. Also, partnering with local private companies. How about talking about that idea for a little bit?
So I think when you've seen zoos turn around, like in Atlanta, for instance, as a the prime example, you've seen all the players in the municipality come together. You've seen the politicians decide that this is important. You've seen corporations say, you know what, we want to see the zoo be great because it makes our hiring easier, for instance, if people have attractive things to do while they're there. And you see wealthy individuals and then the community at large come together. So the tax idea has worked in some other places. They're complicated to do. You need a lot of political will for them, but it gets the zoo's budget out of the hands of the budget meisters, which can be, it has been actually for the Boston Zoo's devastating for the last 60 years. Every time we get in a budget crunch, the zoo is one of the things that goes. It's one of the reasons why they haven't been able to maintain it as well as they would have liked and grow in the way they would have liked. So if you can get all these people, if you can get all these institutions together with or without a tax, you have a lot more opportunity to really make the thing a great institution and a civic asset.
Okay, I'd like to, we've got a bunch of callers waiting to get in here, and we don't have much time. So I'd like to go first to Elizabeth, who's calling from Gloucester. Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, thanks. I just wanted to say I commend the zoos for the work that they're doing, and I believe that they really do care. However, I've never, from the age of four to the present, been to a zoo when I didn't walk away morbidly depressed because animals that clearly are in confinement, what we're saying is, gee, if we just give people everything they want, they'll be so happy, animals the same. I don't agree at all. Their life in the wild, be what it is. There's so much more we can do to try to protect their prospects in the wild than keeping them penned up in zoos. I just think it's morbidly depressing.
Okay. John?
No, I appreciate where you're coming from, but you really have to look. One of the big initiatives that's come up in zoos through zoos in recent years and also got into the lab industry is the idea of environmental enrichment. And those animals aren't just sitting there sort of humming all day long. We're giving them new challenges every day. Literally, my zookeepers are creating calendars of different things that are stimulants, challenges, different smells. They use every sense the animals have. They give them physical challenges. So it's part of that creativity of modern-day animal management that you want not only physically healthy animals, but mentally healthy animals. So I think you're coming from a positive place, but I think that there's probably more happening there than you may know.
Okay, well, we are out of time. John Linehan is president and CEO of Zoo New England, which operates the Franklin Park Zoo and Stoneham Stone Zoo. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Also, Michael Fitzgerald is a freelance journalist covering innovation. His recent article in the Boston Globe magazine was titled, "Why Doesn't Boston Have a Better Zoo?" Thanks.
Thank you.
And for a link to that article, you can go to our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. Coming up, what does Google's name change really mean? I'm Deborah Becker with Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is Radio Boston.